We're talking with Ross Wilson, Texas Cattle Feeders Association. Annual meeting here in Oklahoma City. You've come to Oklahoma City before, and we're most certainly glad to have you back once again here. And tell me a little bit about, the mood of your folks. So you've talked to them on the phone as you're greeting them even now. What's the mood of the feedlot industry here in the fall of 2014?
Well, thanks, Ron, and it's always good to be in Oklahoma City. This is a great city to have meetings in. I think we were here in 2009 or 2010, so it's good to be back. The mood in the cattle industry in general is good. It's good in the cattle feeding business these days. We've had a good past year, but there's also a lot of apprehension because, as all your listeners know, volatility has just been incredible. We're at historically high prices in all segments. Calves, stockers, feeders, fed cattle traded for a record this week at $1.70 a pound or 170 a hundredweight. So that's good. A lot of it, as you know, is supply driven, and that's the flip side of that equation, is that we're needing more numbers, we're needing more cows, calves, feeders going into the feed yards, and we'll get there. As you know, people are beginning to retain heifers. Not as quickly as we would like to see, but in this part of the world, in Oklahoma and Texas and New Mexico, our three-state membership area, we still haven't gotten drought out of our mind, understandably. So if we can continue to get moisture and these pasture conditions hold, and we've got a great start on a winter wheat pasture, if we can just get a little bit more moisture, I think people are going to, their outlooks are positive, but we're apprehensive.
Most certainly, when you think about the industry, we've got some things going for us. You mentioned the cattle prices. Feed grain prices have come down just a tremendous amount since just, 2 years ago?
Exactly. We have been blessed with a wonderful crop. Maybe record, we don't know yet. It's too early to know. The yields that are coming off in some parts of the country are at record levels. So that's a great blessing, and it has dramatically corrected the feed grain price situation. Not as much as some would think because of some struggles with the railroads being able to move that crop. I know the Burlington Northern, Union Pacific a bit, really more so the Burlington Northern, has struggled with managing the rail velocity as they try to move oil and coal and containers and grain. Obviously, we think grain should be number one priority. And we've had meetings with the BNSF, and they're very receptive to our concerns, but it takes a while to turn a railroad around. So that has taken a little bit of the edge off of the price decline because of the basis adjustment we're seeing due to some railroad movement issues.
Did you feel like, traditionally the TCFA area along with southern Kansas, western Kansas has been kind of the heart of the true feedlot country? Really in recent years, it's the Midwest has been kind of a secondary area, but there's been some talk about maybe that's going to flip back eventually. Is that going to happen anytime soon, you think, or will it ever happen?
Oh, I don't know that it will ever happen to the extent that it was 30, 40 years ago. I can't imagine that the industry infrastructure that we have in place in the southern Great Plains, in the Texas and Oklahoma panhandle, southwestern Kansas, southeastern Colorado, is going anywhere. Now, with the numbers challenges that we've talked about, and the fact that they haven't had a drought situation in the Midwest, and the fact that with this grain basis situations, first the grain supply and some byproducts, and the basis situation, rail issue related that we've talked about, there's been some shift of cattle numbers. I think so far this year, Nebraska has had more cattle on feed than Texas for the first time ever for three of the current 10 months. So I don't think that that's on an annual basis for 2014. As we look back on 2014, I don't think the Midwest will market more cattle than we do here in the Southwest. But we need to get some, we need the rains to continue, the moisture situation, the pasture improvement, and we need to get some numbers built back up.
You alluded to those record high prices, $1.70. Problem right now is that we are very thin on our market. We've talked about this before. It seems like we're continuing to see that cash market availability thinner and thinner, almost compared to a year ago. It's thinner.
It is, and that's of concern to a number of people. In fact, we've had some weeks that we traded zero cash cattle. Now, there were tens of thousands of head that traded on grids and formulas and other price discovery mechanisms, but we didn't have that traditional fundamental cash price, cash trade setting the floor for those other markets. So we used other price discovery tools. There's a lot, as you know, and you mentioned, there's a lot of discussion going on in the industry. There's still some cash trade. Well, we traded cash trade this past week in our three-state area, so that came back for that week. We'll probably see between now and the end of the year some weeks that we will possibly have zero cash trade. We'll use other pricing bases to establish that foundation for those other trades that I talked about. That slope, that trend, is the same direction for nearly every part of the country. While there's more cash trade in the Midwest than there is in our three-state area, their downward slope has been pretty dramatic, and they share some of our same concerns. So we've been working with a multi-regional working group through NCBA, National Cattlemen's Beef Association, to try to address that issue. And is there a different price discovery, maybe better termed value discovery mechanism, than the older style, more traditional live cattle cash trade? We don't know the answer to that question yet.
The industry obviously seeking some of those answers.
Very much seeking those answers. And related to that, a very important project in 2015 will be the reauthorization of the mandatory price reporting requirements in Washington with USDA. Established back two or three farm bills ago to try to make sure that producers are getting as much price reporting information or data as they can. Because of this evolving trade, there's a number of people believe that there needs to be more transparency in mandatory price reporting, and maybe we need to realign those buckets, for lack of a better term, on how we're reporting the different kinds of trades, the different kinds of cattle, so that producers, feeders that are selling those cattle get the best information possible. And so TCFA, OCA, working with NCBA and a number of the other state organizations have that as a high priority in 2015.
One other area I wanted to talk with you, Ross, tonight about: the state of Texas has established a new separate state run dollar checkoff. In other words, an additional checkoff amount. Oklahoma's got legislation now where we can pursue that as well. But on the horizon, we've got Secretary Vilsack coming in saying he's going to set up a separate parallel checkoff based on the 96 law. That's got to be a big worry. And I would think that would be a big concern in those as far as the state checkoffs are concerned.
Well, that's a very interesting discussion that's going on in the industry right now. We couldn't be happier in Texas that we've got a state checkoff in place, because we think that's a very important addition to the investment in beef marketing, promotion, research, all of the great things that the national checkoff has done. The disagreement with Secretary Vilsack happens to be that he's interested in doing something under what they call the generic 1996 Commodity Checkoff Act. The beef checkoff, as you know, was established in the 1985 Farm Bill. The 96 Act gives USDA, whether it's this secretary or anyone in the future, much more authority and control over several aspects of the producer's checkoff dollar. It also increases the administrative overhead allowance from 5% in the 1985 to 15%. I don't know too many producers that want to spend another 10% on administrative overhead, but more importantly, they don't want USDA or anyone other than themselves and the elected leaders that they have on all these state beef councils and on the Cattlemen's Beef Board, which has been nominations by the states and appointments by the Secretary of Agriculture. Those are the individuals and the leaders, industry leaders, they want deciding how the dollar's invested, not the Secretary of Agriculture or the staff at USDA. That is the major difference, disagreement that we have with the Secretary today on his proposal.
TCFA, of course, and of course TSCRA, OCA, New Mexico Cattle Growers, all these groups have written the Secretary trying to head him off. Are you think you're going to be able to head him off on this issue?
That's a very good question. Only time will tell. He seems to be moving forward aggressively. We've written him. We're talking to them. We have members of Congress both Democrats and Republicans reaching out to the Secretary saying, time out, Mr. Secretary, let's do this under the 1985 Act. Let the organizations who have been working on a side parallel path, as you know, coming up with some proposed changes to the 1985 referendum checkoff. And this is all about getting another dollar at the national level. I shouldn't say all, but that's the major discussion that's going on. And then if you get that dollar through a producer referendum, so the producers get to vote on that before it would ever happen, then we've got an extra dollar to invest in all these good programs. But it ought to be invested under the structure of the 1985 Act and not the 1996 proposal by Secretary Vilsack.
Ross Wilson, President, CEO of the Texas Cattle Feeders Association, visiting with us at their recent annual convention in Oklahoma City. On the Oklahoma Farm Report, I'm Ron Hayes reporting.